The Warfare Series, Part 4, The Real Enemy. And Yeshua said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual fornication, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they are what defile a person. Mark 7:20-23. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and aliens to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. 2 Peter 2:11. The last article of this series, Confronting Evil, question the absence of a developmental line from the Hebrew word Satan of the original writings, or Old Testament, which means a force of adversarial opposition toward Yahweh's words, into a fully blown persona called Satan in the Messianic writings, New Testament, in which all evil has become embodied. Words mean things. If we are to understand truth in Scripture, we must respect the integrity of the meaning of the words presented to us, apart from what the religious traditions of men have declared them to be. Yeshua said that evil emanates from the heart of man, not some mystical, ethereal persona. If the testimony of the life of Yeshua is to be the benchmark by which everything is measured, including other scripture, then the exchange taking place in the first two chapters of Job need to be re-examined in the light of how much of the rest of Hebrew scripture is written. Throughout the Tanakh, or Old Testament, events and circumstances are often described using a form of phrasing called figurative imagery, language used to express objects, actions, and ideas in such a way that it appeals to our physical senses. Since the word imagery is associated with mental pictures, imagery makes use of particular words that create visual representation of ideas in our minds. Yeshua frequently used this Hebrew technique in his parables to illuminate a particular truth he was trying to convey. So it is, we find the continued usage of figurative imagery in the Messianic writings, or New Testament, of these Hebrew authors who understood how wording could invoke a mental image to convey the sense of what they were writing about. We find this type of imagery in the use of the word Satan. Torah does not speak in purely symbolic, abstract concepts. There is always a literal reality at the core of the subject, which is only then interpreted in a symbolic way to underscore and enhance the truth contained in that reality. Therefore, when the scripture says Satan with a lowercase s and a hyphen, remember, there are no capitalizations in the Hebrew language, and whose definition of Satan is a force of adversarial opposition, not an entity, came among the sons of Yahweh in Job 1:6 and Job 2:1. Then that adversarial force arrived as a force from within the assembly that accuses the brethren. In this case, the righteous Job, in opposition to the words of Yahweh in Leviticus 19:17-18, to love your neighbor as yourself. The exchange that subsequently occurred from a Hebrew perspective was not an exchange between two entities, but a figurative exchange exploring the depth of truth contained in Yahweh's words. What is interesting to note is that after the first two chapters of Job, the word Satan is not found anywhere in the rest of the book. The last chapter of Job clearly states they showed him sympathy and comforted him for all the evil that Yahweh had brought upon him. That's in Job 42:11. In Isaiah 45:7, Yahweh says, I form light and I create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, Yahweh, do all these things. The Hebrew word translated evil in both of these verses is the Hebrew ra, which primarily means calamity. Yahweh uses calamitous evil to incentivize men into seeking truth, into seeking Him. Sinful evil, which is standing in opposition to the nature of Yahweh, originates with man. To become an accuser of the brethren places one in direct adversarial opposition to the nature of Yahweh found in His words, which is selflessness. This is why in the last chapter of Job, beginning with verse 7, we find that those who were placing accusations upon their brother, Job, were rebuked by Yahweh. It was not until they repented and Job forgave them that the calamities were lifted. Words spoken over the brethren while a participant in bringing the kingdom of Yahweh to earth have unmeasurable consequences most have not considered. In John 14:30-31, the Greek word translated as the English prince is only found in the King James Version. The actual Greek says archon, which is more accurately translated as ruler or chief. In the ESV, as in what is dominant, that which leads, not necessarily who leads. The Greek word translated as world in English is cosmos, and is more accurately translated as that which adorns, or an adornment, as an order of government. Precisely the reflection of the temptation Yeshua refused to adorn himself with in Matthew 4:8-10. He rejected this adornment not only in the wilderness, but also when others tried to make him wear that adornment as king in John 6:15. He countered that temptation by reminding himself of the words of his father. Merely speaking the words did not drive the temptation away, but choosing to behaviorally stand in those words by refusing to engage in the temptation presented did put it at bay, eventually dissipating it. Giving in to that temptation would have been acting upon his own determination, placing him in opposition to the selfless nature of the Father. Since he only did exactly as the Father commanded, he could say with certainty that adornment had no place in him, meaning he did not allow it to lead or rule his actions, even though it might have seemed his right to do so. When we remember that all of the books in the book were written by Hebrews from the same Hebrew perspective as is found throughout the original writings, then it becomes imperative to examine the Messianic writings from this same point of reference, remembering also that Yeshua was as human as you and I. Then, like Job, Yeshua's encounter with temptation in the wilderness, referred to as the tempter in Matthew 4:3, was not an exchange between two entities, but was describing the struggle Yeshua was having within himself. James 1:14 through 15 plainly tells us that temptation is not something that comes upon us, but rather is the pull of our own lusts that originate from within. We are tempted when we are drawn away of our own lust and enticed. The Greek word for lust used here is empathemia, and means a desire, craving, or longing. Interestingly, this is the same Greek word translated as the English desire in Luke 22:15, when Yeshua said, "It is with desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you." It is from our own natural desires rising up from within us that entice us to exercise our own determination of what is good or evil apart from what the words of Elohim have proclaimed as good. As our example of how we are to behave in like circumstance, Yeshua resisted the temptation to turn a stone into bread, even though it is a natural desire to want to satisfy hunger, and even though he knew the power was available for him to do so. Nor did he try to pray away his way out of the circumstance he found himself in after those 40 days. Rather than to take control of the circumstance himself, he stood in the goodness of the Father, and having stood, continued to stand even though it might mean he would die. He waited on the Father, and in the end, the Father sent angels to minister to him. He did not leave Yeshua forsaken. That is the same promise we have in Yahweh today. As James explains, we are tempted when we allow our own natural desires to lead our actions. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Ephesians 6:12. So just where are the high or heavenly places? To properly answer that question, first requires an understanding of where heaven is. Isaiah 66:1 and Matthew 6:34 both tell us, heaven is where Spirit, whose name is Yahweh, abides on his throne in his kingdom. Yeshua says in Luke 17:20 and 21, that kingdom is within or among the faithful. The faithful are those who keep the words of Yahweh, just as Yeshua did. If the words of Yeshua are true and heaven is within those in whom the Spirit of Yahweh abides, then those high places are also within. If the kingdom of Yahweh abides within or among the faithful, then those within or among whom it abides become the gatekeepers of Yahweh's kingdom. Those charged with the responsibility of maintaining the integrity of the virtue found in his kingdom. This is what the Hebrew perspective of Scripture consistently considers a high place. The self-determination of man found within or among those considered the faithful to exalt his will in opposition to what Yahweh has declared becomes wickedness in those high places. Understanding this Hebrew perspective brings clarity to the words of Ephesians 6:2. The Greek word translated as wickedness in this verse is poneria, meaning depravity, but is derived from paneros, which, as seen in the previous article, is translated as evil, meaning full of labors, annoyances, hardships, not a persona. The English translated wicked one or evil one in 1 John 5:18 can be seen to mean that the person who keeps himself in Yahweh's words is not touched by this evil force of labor created from his own determination. It is the same word Yeshua uses in Mark 7:21 through 23 as he is describing what comes out of the heart of a man that defiles him. It is also the same Greek word used in James 4:1 that tells us what causes warfare and fights, the desires that war in your members. The Greek word melos means a member of the body. And this brings us right back to the primary usage of the Hebrew word Satan as an accuser of the brethren. For although we do live in the world, we do not wage war in a worldly way, because the weapons we use to wage war are not worldly. On the contrary, they have Yahweh's power for demolishing strongholds. We demolish arguments and every lofty opinion that exalts itself against the true knowledge of Yahweh. We take every thought captive and bring it into obedience in accordance to the life of the Messiah. 2 Corinthians 10:3, 5. The Greek verb translated wage war here, as well as in James 1:4 and 1 Peter 2:11, is strateunontal. It comes from strategos, a word that means to lead, as in an army. Our English word strategy has this Greek word in its background. In these verses, it is in the middle voice, which does not exist in English, meaning that the action described has special importance for the actor. In other words, this war is very personal, a battle that is waged within you. Overcoming means living in the kingdom of Yahweh, the source of life. Losing means becoming a prisoner in the kingdom of darkness and death itself. This is the most serious and consequential fight of your life. It is also the most invisible, the subtlest, and the most insidious. Without vigilance, the war will be over before you even realize what has happened. What vigilance is required to take to defeat this enemy? The same vigilance is described as being used by the saints in Revelation 12:7 through 11, that were able to cast out into the world, not down, the accuser of the brethren from heaven found within their midst. Just as with Job, we must read these verses from the same figurative perspective much of Hebrew scripture is written in. How was the accuser of the brethren overcome? By the saints accepting Yeshua as their Messiah, the blood of the kinsman redeemer restoring the kingdom of Yahweh to the rightful heirs of that promise, the testimony of the life of Yeshua the saints embraced by their actions, and they were resolved to not have any place found in their midst for accusing the brethren, even if it meant their physical death. The weapons of their warfare were those that captivated every thought, exalting itself against the true knowledge of Yahweh and bringing them into obedience to his words. Are there spirits of darkness loose in the world which can occupy the vessels of men? Yes, Yeshua dealt with them all the time, but not in the faithful, and not from an orchestrated center of power embodied in a single persona. The term believer found in Christianity has its root in the replacement theology, which says a mere verbal assent is all that is required to enter the kingdom of Yahweh, while at the same time separating the individual from the actionable words of Yahweh. Consequently, this is precisely why so many who call themselves Christians are found to be in need of deliverance from the effects of evil in their lives, because they are separated from the standards of living defining what keeps them free. The Hebrew word translated as believed, which is counted to Abraham as righteousness in Genesis 15:6, is aman. The same Hebrew word translated as faithful in Numbers 12:7 and Deuteronomy 7:9, meaning to stand firm, to be established in, to stay, to sustain as a workman, to support. It is interesting to observe that nowhere in the Messianic writings are the faithful seen undergoing deliverance or healing. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. 2 Timothy 2:13. What does it mean to be faithless? What are the alarms and the warning signs? Perhaps we can glean a little bit of insight if we look at the other uses of the Greek word apistio. Mark 16:11 uses apistio for disbelief. These people refuse to accept the evidence of the promised Messiah, the resurrection of Yeshua. Luke 24:11 uses the word to describe discounting and minimizing a report. Acts 28:24 employs the verb to describe those who put no credence in the message. Romans 3:3 uses apistio to portray the disobedient disregard of the Hebrews. In each case, the ones who were faithless refused to put their confidence in the proclaimed truth of the promised Messiah to Yahweh's family of Israel. Yeshua, not another Christian Roman god of mankind called Jesus, they were ones who remained unconvinced. Unlike what popular Christian theology would like us to believe, the backside of this verse speaks of Yahweh's faithfulness to his nature, not to Yahweh remaining faithful to anyone in their choice to separate themselves from him by disregarding his words. He cannot deny his very nature, nor will he. The real enemy found in the Messianic writings is not some evil persona, but is the refusal to be counted among those faithful to keep Yahweh's words, even while proclaiming, "I believe." As for you, my son, know the Elohim of your father, and serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind, for Yahweh researches all hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he will let you find him. But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever. 1 Chronicles 28:9.